Hi, I'm Neil Stavem. I want to thank you for listening to this podcast from Connecting Faith. There are many more podcasts available at our website, myfaithradio.com, and your support makes this possible.
Always expect something good on your lunch hour. Connecting Faith with Life.
Well, welcome to Connecting Faith. Thanks so much for joining us today. I'm Joe Bender, and it's wonderful to have you here as we start this first weekend in June. Of course, it's June. That means graduations. And if you're like my family, that means lots of graduations. I always love to see people's pictures on Facebook or just sending those along where they're smiling and they're shaking hands with their administrators or their professors. And I always love to be one of those people on stage just watching a student come toward me, just so thrilled that they've accomplished this great feat. So congratulations to all the graduates. Maybe you are attending lots of open houses this weekend or writing out graduation cards to those who you know the best. So I have a question for you. What is that great piece of advice that you most like to share with graduates? What do you most like to share with graduates? Something that they can be thinking about or something they can work on for their future. There's got to be something that you share. We're going to start asking questions each week on Connecting Faith and would love to have you just participate in answering those questions either on the air or just on our website. And we'll share those with our listeners as we go throughout the week. So you can write in on myfaithradio.com, go to Connecting Faith and answer the question, what advice do you most like to share with graduates? Or maybe you have a piece of advice that you keep receiving. You can share that as well. Or you can give us a call on Monday. You can talk to Neil about your piece of advice. That's 877-93-FAITH. Or give me a call today, 877-933-2484. Share your graduation advice. Well, if you're a parent, anyone knows that educating and encouraging kids is kind of a high calling for both parents and teachers as well. And if you're like me, you're often wondering, am I doing it right? I wonder that as a teacher, and I wonder that as a parent as well. Well, we all want our kids to be educated, and we all want our kids to be smart. They want to be smart, don't they? Well, we're going to talk about that today with Dr. Kathy Cook about her book, Eight Great Smarts, Discover and Nurture Your Child's Intelligences. So what is an intelligence? Well, we'll ask her. Let me tell you a little bit about Kathy Cook, and we'll get her on the show. Dr. Kathy Cook is the founder and president of Celebrate Kids, Inc. of Fort Worth, Texas. She speaks to parents and educators and children of all ages on the topics in this book and in her three other books, Finding Authentic Hope and Wholeness, Screens and Teens, and No More Perfect Kids, which is one of my very favorites, and that's co-authored with Jill Savage. And today's resource, again, is Eight Great Smarts, Discover and Nurture Your Child's Intelligences. Welcome, Dr. Cook.
Well, thank you so much. I'm thrilled to be here.
Well, it's great to have you here. So I know that you have a passion for kids, Kathy, and of course for parents to understand their kids and to raise them well. Tell me how you came to teach on this concept of smarts.
You know, thanks for asking that. I was a school smart kid. So for me and for my brother as well, school was an easy, safe place to be, and I just thought that was the case for everybody. Began teaching second graders after, you know, my first stint in college, and was so saddened by how many children I had in my classes who I knew were smart and had a really hard time convincing themselves of that. Maybe the system did not allow them to prove how much I knew that they understood, because we were a word and logic smart system, and we still are. And I was just grieving for these kids who I knew had so much potential, but they were dismissing themselves. They had parents who, even at that age, when they were just in second grade, parents who were already, I think, having lowered expectations because they were challenged to play the game of school well. And that's really where I began thinking about, there's got to be something here that's missing. And then, you know, praise God that I discovered what Howard Gardner had done and was able to take his work and run with it. It's really been a joy. I really appreciate being on the radio with you so we can tell more people about it.
Well, isn't that true? I just spent some time with a friend of mine who I grew up with. And, I mean, she and I have been friends since we were 8 years old, really. And I asked her something, and she's brilliantly talented. She is just the best mom ever. She's my go-to person when I'm wondering what in the world to do with my children. And she made some comment like, well, I'm not smart like you. I could never do that. And I thought, where in the world does that come from? And I kind of just pressed into that a little bit. And she said she never felt smart. in school, and I never knew that.
Oh, interesting.
And yeah. I'm wondering, did my parents instill that in me? Was it teachers that instilled it in me? I never felt like I was not smart. I don't know. Somehow I knew that message. And as I read your book, I thought, well, people obviously did instill that in me. I just didn't know it at the time.
Right. I think it's a combination of us being surrounded by positive people who had realistic expectations for us and communicated that. And then I think it's also that those of us who have more of the intelligences that fit the school system
right.
are going
right.
to feel, you know, safest there. And that's what, again, part of the book is to help everybody understand that. We're all smart. We're smart differently.
So why is this concept of, like you call it, multiple intelligences, why is this so appealing and something that maybe people haven't heard of? Because like you said, we either think we're school smart or we think we're dumb.
Right, right, right. You know, there's still the old IQ, you know, idea, which is so inappropriate and so, gosh, it's just so not accurate because it tests short-term memory and long-term memory and very much of a logic smart kind of a thing rather than the whole of who we are. So I think it's appealing because, you know, it says, hey, again, I can be smart too. I can survive. And I can thrive, and I can contribute. There are a lot of kids who think they're creative. They know that they're talented. They know that they're drama queens, okay? So we call them that maybe in a negative way, but in reality, they might be the star of the drama when they're in high school. But they don't know that they're good at those things because they're smart. Mm-hmm. And smart's a power word, right, Joe? Mm-hmm. It's a power word. We all want to be smart. There's not a single kid alive who doesn't want to be smart and will ask the question through their behavior or through their actual words, you know, Daddy, am I smart? And then how smart am I? And neither of those questions are as valuable as the question, you know, how am I smart?
It's so funny to go back to high school reunions and things like that and see how people are very successful in very different areas. And like you said, there's someone who you may think was a little weird with their attention to drama or music or robotics or whatever it was, and yet they were able to take that particular intelligence and just parlay it into a wonderful career where all of a sudden that skill that may have been a little unique at the time is now incredibly valuable.
Oh, I love that you said that. You know, let me introduce this idea. How many of us know people who were successful in school and are flunking life?
Hmm.
Right? School was their safe A place. School was their energy, and they were good at it, and they felt safe there, and they've graduated from whatever high school or post-high school experience they chose to have, and now they don't know who they are, and they don't know how to be, and they haven't found the groove, maybe because the only smarts that were really affirmed by parents or developed within themselves were those that I would consider more important in school. But then how many of us know people like you're describing where school might have been a difficult challenge for them? Maybe they didn't take the honors classes. Maybe they didn't feel like they were going to succeed. Maybe their B's and their C's were equivalent to the A's that I earned, but they're being very successful in life. They're enjoying it. They're involved in their communities. They're good, you know, husbands, wives, parents, community leaders. They're involved maybe in their church. And I think this is evidence that all eight matter. Mm. And one of the things I'd like to challenge people to understand is that the purpose of school is not to create kids ready for more school. The purpose of school is to get kids ready for life. And if someone's listening today who wants their children to be successful for a lifetime, then we need to affirm all eight. Mm. Absolutely.
So we're going to talk about those eight intelligences when we come back from our first break, Kathy. But can you tell us if people are born with these distinct intelligences, or are these something that are created?
Howard Gardner believes, and I agree with him, that all of us are born with the capacity to develop all eight. So when we're conceived in our mother's womb, the network in the brain is there for all eight, if you will. There can be certainly things that happen, even a stroke in utero and things that happen that would make different intelligences really hard to develop. But God's plan would be that all of us would be able to develop all eight. It depends upon how early they're awakened. Parents do have a role in this. It's the gene pool of the nature, and then it's the nurture that we provide our children. And the earlier that we awaken the smarts, the greater a likelihood that they will be a strength for a lifetime.
So I'm talking with Dr. Kathy Cook today about her book, Eight Great Smarts, Discover and Nurture Your Child's Intelligences. We'll talk about what a parent's role is in helping the children to discover these smarts and what those eight smarts are. I'm sure you can pick your children out as we go through each one, and we'll have Kathy lay those out for us. Talking to Kathy Cook on Connecting Faith. Welcome back to Connecting Faith. Thanks so much for joining us today. I'm Joe Bender, and just thrilled today to be talking to Dr. Kathy Cook about her book, Eight Great Smarts, Discover and Nurture Your Child's Intelligences. Kathy Cook, I may not be word smart now that I can't even get through that introduction.
No, you are.
So let's go through those eight great smarts one by one. And you can tell us how they're each unique. And you also call them intelligences and say everyone has them, but maybe more are awakened than others. So what does it mean to be word smart? I think most people are probably most familiar with what it might mean to be word smart.
Right. I agree with you. And it's the first one I usually discuss because it's what I call a school smart. Because when we are being word smart, we are thinking with words. We talk, listen, read, and write. And, of course, those are things that we need to do all day long in school and even in Sunday school. So when we're thinking with words inside of our head as well as outside of our head, if you will, we are being word smart. We tend to talk when we're excited, and we might have a conversation inside of our head that you don't know we're having. And so it looks like we're listening to you, but in reality, we're listening to our own internal voice, which is really a pretty funny but can get us into trouble because we stop listening to the voice we're supposed to hear.
Boy, that
so
sounds...
We're good with vocabulary. We're good with reading and vocabulary.
Okay, so people who are word smart would be very successful in school or maybe very successful in a career that had to do with that thinking part, right?
Right. Spelling, vocabulary. You know, what's interesting to bring this up right away is that none of these intelligences ever work alone. They always work in tandem with others. So, for instance, we're going to get to logic smart, which is thinking with questions, and we tend to enjoy nonfiction. So if you're a word smart, logic smart child, you're better at report writing than you are at creative writing. And this is when kids find this out, oh my goodness, it's so empowering for them to understand, okay, I'm not stupid because I can't do this well. I'm just smart in a different way. And it really spins their whole interpretation of themselves, which is very exciting. The power of this that we're sharing with people today is very cool.
Well, and to learn this is very important, even as we're registering our children for school, whether that's a high school situation or even in college. I was just registering my son for his ninth grade classes, and there were a couple of different English options. And the English teacher was, I mean, she was very funny and very descriptive of what those classes were. There was one where you would be reading and discussing poetry and creative writing. And she said, so if your child does not want to talk about poetry, this is probably not the class for him. But if your child likes to read books and write reports, then he should be taking this English class. And it was really interesting because I thought, well, maybe we should develop both of those things. But as I spoke to my child about it, he did have a preference.
Oh, that is so excellent. And I think the child's preference needs to be considered, especially depending upon the age of the child. And let me say this. If a parent is very into poetry, let's say that there's a parent listening who loves poetry, he actually writes poetry in the journals that he or she creates, you know, this is a parent who may want a child to also engage with poetry. Then that's okay to encourage a child to take that elective or to check poetry books out of the library and to read poetry at night. So because there's a benefit relationally if we share intelligences. But I love that example. Very good.
Well, yes. And we discussed that, too, because he's very math and science oriented and I'm very English, writing, creative, music oriented. So we have lots of these discussions at my house. But it does help to understand their bent and what they feel most successful in and then just kind of push them and guide them a little bit. At least that's what we do in my house. I don't know if it's helpful. So
oh, I love that. And let's look at it this way, Joe. Different is different. It's not bad.
Right. Right. That's true.
Oh, that's so powerful. Just get that in your mind. My kids are different from me. They're not wrong. I'm not wrong. We're not bad. We are different in the way that we think and process information.
Sure. So someone who's logic smart then, which is the second one on the list, is someone who thinks with questions. What do you mean by that? What does it mean to think with questions?
Yeah, we reason our way to ideas. We are the why, how come, what, and when and where people. We love it when the world makes sense. We're very logic driven. So we see the inconsistencies. We see the absurdity of things. And that can be really challenging for us. We tend to like math and science. Math makes sense. 2 + 2 is always 4, versus you see the letters READ, and it could be 2 different words, and then red is also RED. So that's very frustrating to those of us who are logic smart. We love science because we tend to like to discover truth on our own. Mm. So kids who discover, invent, explore, are constantly asking us, you know, how come and why, and they want the reason behind the decisions we make. That's often logic smart. And we need to say to our kids, you know, I'm the parent, I'm in charge, go sit down. You know, sometimes we don't need to give them the reasons because they are the children. But if we can understand that the reason they want to know is because they're driven with a need to know because of the kind of brain they have.
Hmm. So if you have a child who really enjoys fixing things, maybe around the house and figuring out how they work, that person might be logic smart as well.
Yeah, great example. We're the ones who can solve problems. In fact, we can solve them before you know you have them, which is not necessarily good. I've actually had people say to me, you know, Kathy, love me before you try to fix me.
Uh-huh.
Those of us, you know, if you're word and logic, which I am, both of those are my top four, you'll talk quickly and you'll want to problem solve because that's a passion you have and it's a gifting you have, and yet people just want to be loved, and so we need to be really careful of that. But other kinds of solutions, you know, we'll be the ones who see that someone's inefficient, and we'll say to our mom, you know, if you put the bowl over here, you wouldn't have to walk so far every time. And the mom is like, oh my gosh, that's a great idea. And it's the 6-year-old who thought of it because the 6-year-old was watching with that logic smart part of his mind.
Hmm. So there are some more kind of creative, I guess, if you were to put them on a spectrum, the next three seem to be a little bit more on that creative perspective. Mm-hmm. What does it mean to be picture smart, to think in pictures?
Yeah, we're the ones who think with our eyes. We think with an imagination, with our eyes in pictures. We doodle and we draw on paper, and we also doodle and draw in our mind. And so if I say that an octopus is playing baseball, listeners just saw that, especially if they're picture smart. And I didn't tell you to see it. I didn't even give you time to see it, but you saw it instantly because words create pictures in your mind. You tend to be the ones that are drawn to fiction and history because as you read, it comes alive in your mind's eye. I'm not very picture smart. I don't tend to read very much fiction. And if I do, I almost always read mysteries because I'm logic smart.
Because you want to figure out what happened.
Exactly. Those are the kinds of TV shows I prefer. So again, we can help our kids to understand why certain things are appealing to them and why certain things are harder, but yet they must be done because obedience is right and your teacher has assigned it. So, you know, so go do it. These are the kids who are also tend to be good at art, but again, there's different intelligences that would come alongside of that.
Well, there might be a new genre that has been birthed for the people who must have logic smart and picture smart, and that is a mystery, but it's science fiction mystery.
Mm,
how about that?
Yes, and it's also interesting to look at technology. Some of the games and the apps that we and our children enjoy are also very connected to these smarts. So if you have children who are playing certain games that require a logic to them, that's worth knowing. Or maybe they're playing games that are more of a creative bent, then that would be more of a picture smart thing too.
So we can look at even the games that our kids like to play and start to decipher where they might be centering the strength of their smarts.
Yeah, I love the way you worded that. It shows which ones are being awakened right now and probably which ones are going to be strengths, especially if we continue to allow them to spend a lot of their time there.
So what does it mean to be music smart? It seems like it should be logical how we think music smart is, but as I read your book, I thought, well, maybe it's not everything I think. Explain what that means.
Yeah, it is rhythms and melodies. You know, so at the most basic level, it is music. And intelligences always begin with interest and then turn into ability if that interest is affirmed by the significant adults in a child's life. Right now, I think in our culture, we have a whole lot of music smart, interested people. So there are people who are constantly listening to music, lots of, you know, pods in the ear, which actually concerns me because I think it allows them to reject people, which is never right. But then that interest, it won't always show up as ability. So there's a hierarchy of giftedness for each of these smarts. You might have a child who's very interested in music, uses it to calm down, uses it as a joy place. And you might have another child who's begging to take piano lessons and is actually really good on the piano and has learned the flute and wants to go to the classical concert with you, you know, at the symphony this summer. That's more of a music smart bent than the child who just enjoys it. And we can use this for studying, too. You know, how do you guys spell Mississippi? There's not a single person listening who doesn't spell Mississippi with a rhythm and a melody. And you'll never not know that word because music is so good for memory.
Well, and there's the person who listens to music because they appreciate music, and then there's the musician, what I would say is someone who wants to create music and then bring out that emotion in other people. And those are that must be kind of that combination of smarts you were talking about.
Yeah, it's excellent. And it's just the earlier it's awakened, the greater the likelihood it's a strength. So I come from a very music smart family. So my brother and I grew up listening to music. Both of my parents sang in the church choir. I began piano lessons in grade one, viola in grade four, was a part of band and orchestra all the way through graduate school. And so today I don't play instruments anymore, but it still is a big passion of my life and something that I do with my spare time and with my money. And so if you want children to enjoy life, again, the music and picture, you're correct that they're more creative. They might not be as essential academically in school, although these are the electives that keep some kids in school. And I love that this model of the brain affirms that these kids are smart. The reason that we're good musically is because we're smart that way. We're not just talented. We are also smart. It's not just the kid who does well at math. It's the kid who earns a consistent A in orchestra and is challenging for first chair and wins it. That is also smart.
That's true. You know, I had an opera singer, a professional opera singer for a mother, choir director, voice teacher. And I mean, she would sing directions. She would sing us awake in the morning. And so, and she has just a big booming opera singer voice. And, but I watched the way that she approached things, and she could use music as a way to encourage you to work harder at your math or at your reading. And she always just parlayed those two skills together. You are creative and you learned that you practice every day and you can achieve this on the piano. And she would make that to make sense then if I'm working on a research paper. Remember how you practiced really hard every single day? You were really bad. And then all of a sudden you got to the point where you were pretty good. You did a little bit each day. That's how you do your research paper. And I'm so grateful for that.
That is so powerful. And that is actually a good advantage of music, probably art and athletics as well, is that we tend to understand character. Perseverance, diligence, teachability, perfect practice might make us perfect. Absolutely. And that's such an important piece of this.
Well, I'm talking to Dr. Kathy Cook today about her book, 8 Great Smarts, Discover and Nurture Your Child's Intelligences. We got through a few of them, about half. We'll get through the other half as we come back from our break. If you are listening today, you'd like to get a copy of her book, give us a call, 877-933-2484. That's 877-93-FAITH. You can also ask Kathy a question if you'd like. We will be back after the break. Welcome back to Connecting Faith. I'm Joe Bender. If you're looking for ways to make your kids thrive, did you know that we have an incredible responsibility and opportunity as parents to help them do so? Maybe you're wondering how to get started. Well, I'm talking today with Dr. Kathy Cook, who's written a great book called 8 Great Smarts, Discover and Nurture Your Child's Intelligences. So if we have 4 kids, Kathy, you're saying that we might not parent them all the same. They might have different smarts that kind of make their way to the surface.
I can pretty much guarantee they will. And that's one of the reasons that's complicated. And we need to tell our kids that I treat you uniquely because you are unique. Because sometimes they'll say, you know, you're not fair. You're letting him color and you're making me read. Well, that's the way that you've been designed by God. and I'm going to know who you are as an individual and treat you that way. That's what God would want us to do.
I was always a little bit jealous, if I can say that on the air, of the moms who had little girls who would sit in color, and my two little boys would not do that, Kathy.
Yes.
That's a different book, isn't it?
Yes. You know, I cover that, but yes, General Parenting 101 for sure.
Well, we've gone through what it means to be word smart, logic smart, picture smart, and music smart. So the next one is body smart. What does it mean to be body smart?
These are the kids and adults who think by movement and touch. They might be athletes. They might be actors and can make their whole body look angry even though they're not angry. They might sculpt with clay, which is an example of picture and body coming together. They might be dancers, and they might be truck drivers someday and teachers who talk with their hands. But we're the movement and touch people. We'll actually learn best when you allow us to maybe pace with a clipboard or study spelling words while we're swinging on the swing set. And these might have been your boys. Many boys do tend to appear to be more this way, although as a girl, I was very body smart as a kid and an athlete all the way through college. So it shows up again in a variety of people.
I've often wondered what it is about someone who talks with their hands. I am one of those people as well. And so maybe that means I'm body smart.
I would say it's word and body combined. Sometimes we end up being in drama or community theater like I was as a kid. But absolutely, you're trying to emphasize the strength of your phrase. You're trying to say to your audience, you know, listen to me. I'm even talking now with my hands and I'm on the radio, you know. None of you can see me, but my right hand is extended and I'm dramatically explaining that this is really important. Absolutely.
I love that. And so if you have a kid who maybe does not want to do anything in front of the classroom, maybe not give a project, those things make him or her very uncomfortable and they'd rather write a report, then maybe the body smart is not as well pronounced in them as the word or logic smart.
That's a great point, and it also might be a people smart factor, which we're going to get to in a minute. But yeah, I agree. That's a great point. I love that you're bringing out this idea that we can get to know our kids, and we can see what challenges them and what is easy for them and which smarts are involved. And then we can decide as parents and teachers, do we want to improve that smart? Maybe I should read that chapter in the book first or do those kinds of activities this summer so that that smart becomes one that my child is more familiar with and feels safer using.
Sure. Or to look for things that, you know, if we don't have those smarts as pronounced as a parent, then sometimes we don't understand why our child might not be successful in one area or another. And we really need to search out these other areas that we're not even familiar with so that we can give them that benefit.
Oh, thank you, thank you, because they are created in God's image, not ours, and so they're not necessarily going to be just like us, and that can be a challenge. I love what you said. Mm.
It's a fun challenge, though. I love trying to find out those things where my kids really shine. So what does it mean to be nature smart? I think I need one of those people in my household. What does it mean to be nature smart?
Yeah, well, these are the ones who would rather be outside than inside, and they get a lot of their joy from nature. They go outside when they're excited, actually, and they actually like to get dirty. They're rocks, plants, minerals kind of people. They like earth science and biology more than they do general science and chemistry, and they think with patterns. So their eyes are very good at the pattern. So it's related to being picture smart in that both of these are used in their eyes, but the nature smart people remember where the blue goes on a blue bird versus a blue jay. They remember if this is an elm tree or an oak tree or a white pine, because they actually can remember shapes, designs, colors, even textures would be something that a nature smart person might get into. Absolutely. Really, really interesting. When I talk to kids, 80% of them raise their hands to say that they love to get dirty. And it cracks me up, but that's almost always indicative of some nature smart being developed.
Well, it's funny because we live in an area of the country where there's something called the Boundary Waters, which is just this great untapped and undeveloped. You get to take a canoe and it's just stunningly beautiful and fish out of your canoe and camp and, you know, cut down trees. It's ridiculously, I don't know, what's the word I'm looking for? It's very challenging, okay, if you're not an outdoor kind of nature smart kind of person. But if you just have a nature smart person leading you in that adventure, it is so rewarding and so fun because someone is not only comfortable in their surroundings, but they're able to encourage and inspire others to be comfortable in those surroundings.
Exactly. I love that. It's who we connect with. So, I'm not very picture smart, but I will go to an art museum, but I will only go with somebody who's very picture smart so that I understand it and have a much better time. Right. Absolutely.
Otherwise, you great don't see point. The value of it. You just think, well, I don't know how to do that. So, like my friend said at the beginning, well, I'm not smart like that.
Right. And so parents, again, you know, we can surround our kids with people who are smart differently from us. If I know that I've got a nature smart child and I'm not very nature smart myself, I can still go to the botanical garden, but I invite another family to go along where I know that that mom or dad really enjoys the outdoors and really understands things of nature. We're all going to have a better time.
Good point. So what does it mean to be people smart? This sounds incredibly valuable as well, and that it might be more pronounced in others than some others.
Right. It's actually, I think, maybe the most important one to develop today, even more so than word and logic. People smart people think with other people. So we are brainstormers and networkers. We're the ones who know what we know when we hear ourselves say it and someone responds. So this is the child who will probably not do well studying alone in his bedroom, but might actually do better in the den, living room, kitchen, or patio, being surrounded by some other people. Even if we're not talking to the people smart people get energy intellectually, believe it or not, from the people that they're surrounded by. The reason that I say it's so important is I think we need to learn to live in community. And we have an isolation factor going on with texting and social media and gaming and eyes looking down. And so we tend to maybe go to Siri on the phone rather than to dad, which is really a tragedy. The other reason I think it's so valuable is that this is how you know body language and can respond appropriately. So if you walk into a room and you recognize that somebody is sad, mad, angry, happy, joyful, content, your ability to figure that out is because you're people smart and you can look at a face, facial features, the way they're holding their body and know. This is how kids know who is safe and who is for them and who is against them. This is how your preteen can go into a summer camp or a youth group, walk into a room and figure out where to sit, where she may feel more welcomed. This is how a fourth grader who goes to VBS next week can figure out how to walk into a situation and figure out where to sit and be welcomed. It's very, very important that we develop this with kids.
So how can we as parents help develop that child who may not be very people smart, and yet we know it's an essential quality for them, an essential skill, really, for them to be able to succeed well in life? Kind of what you were saying earlier is we don't just go to school and teach being good at school. We need to use school as an opportunity to teach them how to be successful in life.
Yeah, thanks. You know, one thing is certainly just to invite their questions and to have devotions or conversations in the car, turn off the radio and talk and have discussions and dialogue and questions and answers, and showing the kids that brainstorming and generating truth together, valuing others' opinions, but not meaning that you're not open to other people's ideas. All of that's part of it. And then one fun thing that you can do is actually watch a TV show or a movie with no sound. Just watch what's going on the screen and pause it every once in a while and say, okay, who in that scene was in charge? And how did you know? And who in that scene was scared? And how did you know? Or you could say to your kids, let's watch the next 5 minutes. And when you've determined somebody's attitude, you know, thumbs up and I'll pause it and tell us what you saw. And that can be a great way to teach kids to pay attention to hand motions, body language, facial features, and those kinds of things.
Well, and so I'm married to someone who is very people smart, and he is a salesperson, and so you can see how that would be a perfect career for him. And we have often talked about this particular thing, because we have one child who is incredibly people smart, one child who struggles with this a little bit more. And so I have been asking questions, well, what do you do when you walk into a room and you don't know anyone? Like, where do you go? Who do you talk to? What questions do you ask? And so he's given me kind of three questions that you can ask all the time. You can ask someone about their surroundings. Where do they live? You can ask someone about their family. And you can ask someone about their job. And if you have those three questions in your head, then you'll have a conversation with someone.
Yes, love that. Love that. And those are three great questions. Yeah, I would agree.
It was just a good way to become a little bit more people smart, even though it came very naturally for him and for me and my son. We struggle with that a little bit more.
And I love that you saw that you could intervene there, you know, rather than just letting your kid struggle and just saying as a parent, well, he's always going to have a hard time at this. No, he doesn't need to always have a hard time at that. You know, one reason I wrote the book, and I'm thrilled to be with you today, is that we can further awaken and strengthen each of these smarts. It's never too late. The younger the kids are, the easier it's going to be for them to develop an understanding. But wow, for you to be seen by your son as an advocate, and as a teacher, that's so powerful. Good for you.
Well, it's just because I struggle with that. So, I mean, it's easy to see your children struggling when you struggle as well. So,
mm-hmm.
So we have one more smart I'd love to get to before we have to take our last break. What does it mean to be self-smart? I think we all want this for ourselves and for our children, but what does it mean to be self-smart?
Yeah, interesting. These are the people who think deeply inside of themselves with reflection. So they can tend to be quiet. They can tend to think they're slow because no question is easy. Every question has to be analyzed and thought through, and the answer just has to feel right. So even if you say, you know, what restaurant you want to go to tonight, they can be like paralyzed by that because there's like 1,000 restaurants within a 20-mile radius, and I just don't know what I'm in the mood for. Well, just decide. It's really hard for self-smart people to decide. It has to feel right. We know ourselves well, and this is a great quality to, again, developing your children is a self-awareness. And these kids and adults, when you're being self-smart, you crave quiet, peace, privacy, and space.
Mm.
Quiet, peace, privacy, and space. And we live in a loud, hurried, crowded world. This intelligence is essential to awakening our children because it's what allows them to be alone and content when they're alone and not lonely when they're alone.
Mm.
And they discover the joy of knowing the knowing and feeling good about the discovery of truth and emotion. So it's very, very important intelligence. Absolutely. And it can be hard in school because it's hurry, hurry, here's the next book, here's the next question, finish this. And we don't give self-smart people enough time, and that can be really stressful for them.
Isn't that interesting? I was just at the grocery store yesterday, and I asked my son, what do you want for dinner? Dad's not going to be home for dinner. Let's get whatever you want for dinner. And I thought that was just such a great question to ask. I thought he'd be blessed by my question. And he sat there kind of in a stupor. And then finally he said, what are my choices? And I'm like,
oh,
we're at the grocery store. You can have anything you want. And so then we came up with just three of his very favorite things to eat and then made our choices from there. But it's just so funny because you think that you're helping your child in one way, and then you realize that that might not be helpful for them. And so to kind of step back, and now I can say, well, he's self-smart.
That's excellent. I love the verbal multiple choice. I often recommend that. Do you want Italian, American, Mexican? And if they choose Italian, okay, do you want this, this, or this? A verbal multiple choice, giving choices, can really help the self-smart people focus, and it gives them the freedom. They know that they're going to be right within that parameter, and self-smart people, maybe more than the others, want to be right.
Hmm. Oh, yes, that would be true as well. You're helping me get to know my own child. Well, I'm talking to Dr. Kathy Cook today. She's written a great book called 8 Great Smarts. And we're talking about how do we learn what our kids are smart at and or what are their strongest smarts, I guess. We are going to talk a little bit more about Kathy. And maybe you're listening today and you have a question for her. I'm sure she'd love to take your call. You can give us a call at 877-93-FAITH, 877-933-2484 on the air with Dr. Kathy Cook. We'll be right back. Connecting Faith, I'm Joe Bender, talking with Dr. Kathy Cook today. Dr. Cook is the founder and president of Celebrate Kids Incorporated, located in Fort Worth, Texas, but producing resources for parents and families worldwide. We're talking about her book, 8 Great Smarts, Discover and Nurture Your Child's Intelligences. So, Kathy, do you find that given this model we've been talking about, that adults are also able to better understand their own educational past? And why is that important?
Yes, they are able to go back and kind of reframe it and understand that their parents did the best they knew how to do, that maybe the teacher also did that, they'll discover and say to me, man, I thought my brother was the smart one. Now I know I'm smart too. So it really changes, you know, that whole perspective. You know, I'm not stupid and less than. I'm smart too. I'm not just creative. Maybe it took me longer to do my work, but I did it well. Therefore, I am also smart. And like I said before, it's a power word and it's energizing to people. So absolutely, there's never a time that I speak on this that there aren't adults who come to me and say, you know, thanks, you've re-energized my own opinion of myself, not in an egotistical way, but in a very positive way.
Well, even as we're sitting here listening, my producer Aaron and I were just chatting, and I found that we're very similar, which is kind of freaky. But we are identifying with some of these smarts and saying, aha, maybe that's why I act this way or think this way, and that it's not something that is diminished in our smartness. It's just a different way that we approach subjects or situations.
Absolutely. You know, I think it has a lot to say even about what we do in our spare time. Right? So do you want to go to a concert, or do you want to curl up with a good book? Do you want to go for a walk in a park? Do you want to talk on the phone with a long-lost friend? Do you want to problem solve and investigate something and try to figure out why something works the way it does? And it can be irritating, you know, because your spouse or your best friend does not want to do that. So this is where we learn the rhythm of life. And, you know, we do something to affirm a friend on a Saturday and something else on a Sunday. But I think it has a lot to say to us about the rhythms of life. And it can be a very positive way to converse and to discover more about life and more about ourselves.
Well, and there is just this innate desire to know ourselves a little bit better. But you're right that there's also an innate desire to be known, isn't there?
Absolutely. Oh, my gosh. And I think that's part of the power of this. I think every one of us is created to be known, and certainly to be known by our Father God, and He knows us intimately, and He would want us to get ourselves. Absolutely. Man, I could talk for an hour on that. There's not a child alive who isn't asking through their behavior, who am I? And when we say to them, man, the reason that was easy is because you're smart in this way. You know, the reason that that's a little bit hard, like spelling, for me, spelling is not easy for me. And I'm an author and an earned PhD, but I'm very logic smart. So I want the rules to work. If an E is at the end of the word to make the first vowel long, then what's it doing at the end of come? And who would it be at the end of comb? I mean, seriously, you know, it just, so spelling doesn't come naturally to me because I'm logic smart and I'm not very picture smart. So I don't remember what the word looked like the last time I saw it. But I'm still an author because God wins, and God said, right. And I'm not going to say, well, spelling is hard. He's going to be like, so what? You know, right anyway. So this way of being smart can help us understand the challenges and the ease of life, and it gives us a new view and a new way to have a conversation. And we can learn to use strong smarts alongside of those that are weaker so that we do a better job in life and in school. So empowering.
Well, and as we get to know ourselves a little bit better and get to know others, we realize that there are other people who can fill in those gaps, like you said about the spelling. You have an editor and spell check. Yeah. I mean, we thank God for spell check all of the time. We're just so grateful because
exactly.
It really does help us. But other people can really be part of that solution for us, whether it's your spouse or your friend or someone that you hire.
Absolutely. And wouldn't it be great if children understood that they were not created to live in isolation, that we were created for community and for fellowship and for relationships that are vibrant? So, you know, I sometimes say in my presentations that although I'm the founder and president of my company and I'm the PhD, if you will, my staff proofreads my work. It's easy to get the wrong your or there or whether or to. Or the other day I was writing something and I had the wrong word. They're very similar words. I can't think now what they were, but very similar words. They both started with the same two or three letters. And it wasn't until I read it out loud myself that I caught that I had the wrong word there. My brain was working faster than my fingers and the wrong word came out. And, you know, and then I say to kids, you know, so spelling doesn't come naturally to me and I have to rely on other people. Am I stupid? And they all shout out, no. And then I say, so when something's hard for you, are you stupid? And they have to say no. And that's very powerful. So you use your character. You persevere, you're diligent, you're teachable, and you're open. We've got to develop kids' heart alongside of the mind. And then we surround ourselves with truth and with people who are for us. And we humble ourselves and we work together as a family. We work together in community. So valuable to teach that, and we can teach that in this context, as you're pointing out. I appreciate that.
Well, so dare I say, are schools really doing this right, or are we doing our kids a disservice on this just multiple testing and not really getting to know the individual?
Oh, my goodness. No, I'm glad you brought that up.
I should always bring that up when we have 3 minutes left, right?
Yeah, seriously. Oh, my gosh. Way to go. I do think that some schools are aligned for word and logic smart kids, and all the other intelligences feel less important, and the children who are gifted with the other six feel less important and less able, and I think that's a tragedy. I think one reason homeschooling is on the increase in our country is that more and more parents want to know their children and want their children to be able to be successful, and they have figured out that a system that overtests and is interested in simply reading, writing, speaking, listening, asking, and answering questions is not going to work for their kids, and I applaud their choice to intervene. If we have kids in a system that is word and logic and over testing, we can still help our kids at home when they study with all eight. And in my book, there are a lot of suggestions about how to do that.
I love that. And really, you kind of interweave throughout your book just that responsibility that we have as parents to assess and be aware of what's going on in the lives of our children, whether that be through athletics or music or school, so that we can kind of fill in those gaps with knowing who they are so that we can encourage them in those areas where they may be feeling a little bit less than simply because it's the status quo.
Absolutely. Well stated. And if our kids know that we know them and that we are for them, they are much more willing to listen to us. Absolutely.
Well, and even to look at those grades and know that, well, maybe you're not going to be getting straight A's, and to let them know that that's okay, that they're not on the top end of that, whatever that scale is for the test that they just took, to because we know they may be have a different strength.
Amen. If their B is their A, celebrate the B. If they were capable of an A and they checked out and they did not diligently persevere, then have that conversation. But if you know that they're consistently, from the time that they've entered school, math is hard or writing is hard or spelling is challenging or vocabulary isn't their strength, you need to accept that as a parent and not let those kids think that you think they're broken. Mm. Have the conversation. Absolutely.
So how does your teaching about the eight great smarts incorporate the truth about God?
Wow. You know, the things about God that we find attractive are probably related to our smarts. So, for instance, I'm very word and logic. So I very much appreciate that God is wise and that he calls us to wisdom. I appreciate that Colossians 2:3 says that in Christ is hidden all wisdom and knowledge. Somebody else who's more picture smart might appreciate the visual imagery that comes to them as they read scripture or even hear a pastor preach a message. Those of us who are music smart are drawn to worship in a church service and the psalms, and we might really be waiting for the trumpet to sound. So the way that we're smart causes certain passages, I think, to be relevant, certain names of God in Christ and attributes of God to be most important. It can actually shift the way we evangelize. If we know somebody is picture smart or nature smart, talk about creation and Noah and Jonah, and the planting of seed on fertile ground versus tossing seed among the weeds. Those kinds of things can help us address spiritual truth in a way that each person can hear it because of the way that they're smart.
Well, isn't it great that we have just a multifaceted God with just so many different qualities that he really does appeal to just such a wide range of personality types or strengths or smarts?
Amen. And if we talk about the God of the Bible that person wants, they'll find the God of the Bible attractive, and then we can expand their understanding into the whole of God.
Mm. Well, Kathy...
Yeah, Great questions.
Thank you, Joe. So grateful that you were able to join me today. And I'm just fascinated by your work and just love that parents are wanting to know their kids so that we can help our kids succeed in this life and be able to know the love of God first and foremost. So thanks for joining us. Thanks for writing the book.
It was a privilege. Thank you very much.
Well, thanks for listening to Connecting Faith. And again, you can shoot us a call or an email at myfaithradio.com. Just click on Connecting Faith if you want to get in on the drawing for Kathy's book or ask us a question. We'll be happy to answer that on next week's show. Thanks for joining us and have a great weekend.